Okay, I think it's 12:30 here, just about. So thank you. It's a pleasure to welcome back Dr. Benny Gesundheit, who's been, I think we're up to 26 already of our 30-part amazing series on Tehillim. That's on Tuesday, so you can still come. We'll be going on for the next, 4 weeks or so. Been doing a 30-part series on Tehillim, and Dr. Benny, of course, is a medical doctor, a very creative thinker, and alumdan, and really a pleasure. And he's been working on Sefer Tehillim for years and years, published a book on it, always has interesting creative stuff. And it's a pleasure to welcome him back. And for this like special two-part series on Pesach, I think called From the Mishnah to the Meal, the origins of that God. I want to thank Jeff Weiss for sponsoring the Shiur and observance of Yahrzeit for his father, Binyamin Ben Chaim, and we should the Neshama, the Yahrzeit was last week already, but sponsor it, and we should have good health and long life, and we should have many reasons to celebrate your happy occasion. Okay, Dr. Benny, Vakasha, it's all yours.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody. It's a pleasure to teach Haggadah Shel Pesach. Thanks for your warm words, Rabbi Jay. And I want to give first a few introductory words before we start the topic of Haggadah Shel Pesach. Here we have the topic. And before we start talking on that, I would like to introduce you to the topic that we learned together directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. David HaMelech, of course, that is the Tehillim course, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and a lot of Tanaim scholars from the Mishnah and the Talmud, and later Talmidei Chachamim. I would like to learn from them directly and develop the syllabus based on a very systematic Mishnah, where it says in the Mishnah Pirkei Avot, Hu haya omer ben chamesh lamikra, ben eser lamishnah, ben shlosh esre lemitzvot, ben chamesh esre letalmud. The Mishnah says at the age of 5, the child should learn the Bible, afterwards the Mishnah, and at the end, the Talmud. How interesting that the Mishnah was fully aware you cannot get away just with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says we need also the Talmud as an explanation. But this Mishnah is an extremely, extremely clear statement for the syllabus, how one should learn. And what is true at the age of 5, 10, and 15 years is also true later on. Don't start with all the explanations from the Gemara and the Midrash and the Gematria and Chassidut when you talk about the Haggadah. Start with the basics. And I see every year, Baruch Hashem, no shortage of books of Perushim on the Haggadah and a lot of explanations. And I read them, I buy them, and I enjoy them tremendously. But I miss very often, what's the basic? Where do we start here? Is there a clear understanding? And that's what I want to show here in the syllabus, actually on my website, Tefila, which I try to develop and show these aspects. We should always understand what's the source in the Mishnah. What is the source in the Mikra, in the Bible? Sometimes, even not the Bible, we should understand in the context of the Exodus of Egypt, what was in Egypt? Learn a little bit Egyptology. History, what was Moshe Rabbeinu and Am Yisrael dealing with when they lived in Egypt and when they got out from Egypt? So to understand this background is really a good approach that we should learn at the age of 5 and even before. So this way I presented, I have many years I've presented something in the Haggadah, and I would like to show you the way I would like to see it now. On the website you will find material in Hebrew and in English. And I would like to give a systematic approach. Some of them I did last year, and you have it online on the website, on Egyptology and the Bible. How does the Bible face it? What is the structure of all the Jewish Chagim? And we have a lot of sources in the Haggadah which are clearly taken from the Bible. Listed here, the 10 plagues, Parshat Bikurim, the four children, and of course, Tehillim. In the Mishnah, we have a huge, the basis of the entire Haggadah. And if we want to understand the Haggadah, let me be very, very clear. Without understanding the Mishnah very well, we will not understand the Haggadah. We will talk about Halachmania, and at the end we have Chad Gadya, and we have Chad Miyodea. But we will get lost in a not productive and not systematic way. So focusing on the Mishnah is really, for in the context of the Haggadah, the right thing to do. And we have, of course, afterwards the development of the Mishnah later on in the Talmudim and in the Midrash. That might be a masterpiece, a good test case. Learn the Mishnah, not only for the Haggadah, learn the Mishnah very well. What did the Mishnah take from the Bible? How did the Mishnah understand the Bible? How was it organized? What historical background can we learn from the Mishnah? What is the way of thinking in the Mishnah? And from there, how is it developed in the Talmud, the Babylonian, not necessarily the same in the Yerushalmi Gemara. So if we look at that for the Haggadah, let's take briefly an overview on Jewish literature, rabbinic literature. And I try to do that on one page. It's a little bit the chutzpah to do it all on one page. You see the Bible at the very beginning, the basis, of course, and the Mishnah, which is developed in six different volumes, Zayim Moed Nashim, Nezikim Kodashim Taharot, and developed from the Midrashim in the Bible. How is that explained in the Gemara? And we have a Yerushalmi and the Bavli. And it is developed in two different ways. A lot to be learned from both and their difference. And afterwards, we have the later literature, which is after the editing of the Gemara, 7th century, Saboraim. We have the Poskim, we have Rabbi Yosef Karo, who took from Rif Rambam Rosh and Halacha. We have a lot of development here, and they go back in later generations, back to the Bible, back to the Mishnah and Gemara. There is no culture where you have a continuity over hundreds, over centuries and thousands of years, and they all talk together. If we talk now about this flow from Har Sinai, from the Exodus of Egypt till today, that is really what Rabbi Natan Miroma, in his famous encyclopedia, he said, halacha is, it comes from Har Sinai, and it goes over all the generations. I do think that if we look now for the Haggadah, what happens in the Mishnah, we can really witness and experience how the Mishnah is the basis, taking from previous sources, and the Mishnah is the basis for all coming sources. I cannot start learning the Mishnah without saying a few words about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and that, of course, would be a course for many, many hours and parts. They're wonderful Hebrew research of Ofra Meir and Aaron Oppenheimer. A lot of material is, of course, written in other languages. Let me start with three very short midrashim relating to the Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, which are really relevant for our lecture afterwards. Amar Rab Zeira Amarav, Mai Dichtiv V'Tov Lev Mishte Tamit. A person who is the person who is always in a good mood and he drinks and he is happy, Mishte Tamit, Ze Bal Mishnah. The person who understands the Mishnah, he lives all his life in a party, in a Mishte. Lolam Heveratz Le Mishnah Yoter Min HaTalmud. The Talmud says you should always focus on the Mishnah and run after the Mishnah, and the Talmud says even more than the Gemara. So how interesting, back to the basis in the Mishnah. Therefore, I want to show that, to illustrate that, when we talk about the Haggadah. And here we have a fascinating historical statement about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And that's the research of Oppenheimer. In his book, he quotes in Gemara in Masechet Megillah. It says in Masechet Megillah that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, he tried to abolish the fast of the ninth Av. Ubikesh la'akor tisha ba'av. Stop mourning after the temple, the destruction of the temple. He lived in the second century. He was born, says the Gemara in Kiddushin, the date when Rabbi Akiva was killed. A terrible death. He died a terrible death of martyrdom. At that day, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was born, and he did not want to celebrate Tisha B'Av. The Gemara tries to explain it was Shabbos, Tisha B'Av was Shabbat, and afterwards, no. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not want to celebrate, to indicate that we live in a Chorban. He wanted to continue a situation like in the time of the temple, that the Jewish state is organized in Israel. He was actually quite successful at 100 years after the destruction. He was very successful, outstanding connections with Rome, Antoninus, and he was capable to maintain something. He spoke a beautiful Hebrew. He didn't go to Babylon. It was a hard time. He wanted to continue. That was his message and his legacy. We should show that this statement is actually the basis of the 10th Perek in Masechet Psachim, which is dealing with the Haggadah. And that is an excellent test study, a case study, that we learn what happened at the time of the Mikdash. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi didn't live that time. What happened afterwards? How did he deal the early Christian movement? How did he deal with the Roman symposium, the way that was done from the Hellenistic time? How did he prepare the next generations he was not aware of, the Babylonian Talmud and the Talmud Yerushalmi? And we will see a very, very interesting flow of these ideas, which I want to show here. So if we look at the sources in the Bible, yes, a lot of sources which describe the Exodus, Yetziat Mitzrayim. And we can learn them, but the Mishnah took very special sources from the Bible and connected that, as we should see, to meaningful messages for their generation, both in the Mishnah and both in the Gemara. They had a very special view, how b'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo, kihilu hu yatzam Mitzrayim, how in every generation one should see himself as if he has left Egypt. So if we see how Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi connected that, we will learn a lot, not only in the Mishnah, what is the shape and the shaping of the Haggadah, and which mind created the Haggadah, which is afterwards, which was afterwards developed in many, many generations. Of course, interesting how did Rambam develop that, and then later generations. The focus is now on the Mishnah. So let's get started. And before I say the Mishnah, which is a very general term, we have to be aware that the Mishnah, which we find in the Talmud of the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, and we find it in the Talmud Yerushalmi, there is a manuscript which is called from the David Kaufman manuscript of the Mishnah. It is the best, a very, very reliable, a complete manuscript, which was found much later than, of course, the time of the Mishnah. It is from the 11th, 12th century, from Italy, might be even earlier sources. And here we have an unbelievable testimonial. We have an unbelievable document. How was the original Mishnah written? And we should see quite surprising informations if we study that. That's not something one learns in the yeshiva, but I think it's extremely interesting. And most importantly, there's a lot of emet, a lot of academic truth that we can learn a lot. How did Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, before later sources took care of his sources, what was the original authentic text by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? That is the text of the Mishnah by Kaufman manuscript. You see a beautiful manuscript. It has nikud, the punctuation. It is very clear, not hard to read, and it's online. And we should see some very, very meaningful and very helpful insights from here. Before we talk about the Mishnah in Psachim, which talks about the Haggadah, which is the 10th Perek, we should look at the entire Masechet. Masechet is normally translated as a tractate, a unit. Masechet is Elohei Masecha. It is shaped as one unit. So there is it's not a mistake to look at the Masechet. How is the entire unit on Psachim structured? The first four units, they deal with chametz. How to get rid of chametz, how to prepare matzot, and we are not allowed to work from Erev Pesach, Makom Shenahagu, Perek Dalet. Afterwards, we have five chapters, which in much detail describe what happened in the Mikdash. We know that from Josephus Flavius, a non-rabbinic source, a historical source, the most important one from the temple period. And we have the 10th chapter. Is the 10th chapter, which is describing the Haggadah, talking about the time of the temple, meaning when there were korbanot and they brought the sacrifice to the Mikdash, or is it written at the time when the temple didn't exist anymore? Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi lived many years after the destruction. He was born much, much later. So that is an interesting question that we should address later on. And learning the Haggadah from the Mishnah, I brought here some sources. One of the best research, those who read Hebrew, is from Meir Ish Shalom back in Vienna in the 19th century, a masterpiece, Al Sedar v'Haggadah shel Leilel HaPesach. And he tries to give a very detailed commentary on the Mishnah, and from there, taking what do we have in the Haggadah. That's what I'm trying to do. There's a lot more research than what I showed here, but that is an extremely interesting exercise, which I cannot emphasize enough. What we learn from the temple period in the Korban, what happened after the exile? Or what should we learn today that we came back, and Baruch Hashem, we are back in Eretz Yisrael. That's the unit of the entire Haggadah Shel Pesach. And I prepared I called it the accordion, where you see on one page just this part of the Mishnah, and afterwards on 12 pages, the entire Haggadah Shel Pesach. What I did here, I colored in the Mishnah, what is Mishnah source? It means the Parashat Bikurim, and the Halel, the Tehillim part.
Can you make it a bit bigger? This page came very small on the screen.
Yes, it will come up bigger.
It
will come up bigger, you will see. So I want to show that a lot came from the Tanakh, and it flows through the Mishnah, which we have to understand in much detail. At the time of the Mishnah, there was no commentary on the Mishnah, and there was no Gemara yet. And afterwards, a lot grow from here. And that is the flow. I'm aware we cannot yet see what is the text here. I put here in the Mishnah the 15 symbols, the 15 topics, which are the Haggadah. And now if we see this flow, we can see very, very beautifully how everything started from the Mishnah and developed from the Mishnah. Bechol dor vador chayav adam lirot et atzmo ki ilu hu yatsa. So now I know, Rabbi Jay, that's not what you had in mind to make it bigger. I made it smaller. I make it smaller here, but what I show here, that is the entire text, which if somebody, if I could share with you to give this text, and it is a text of that you can really read and enjoy at the Seder, we have here just 10 pages. That's all, even less. And that is the entire Haggadah. And one may ask might be the best question for the Seder, what is the organization? So I want to show that now, and here we have it a little bit bigger. What I want to do during the lecture today, I want to talk today about the first four Mishnayot. What do we see in the Mishnah? Enjoy Keilu, we are learning from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And he had clear messages, which he summarized in the Mishnah. If you go afterwards home, take the Mishnah on the Haggadah and learn at home, make the Seder at home. And I will summarize these four Mishnayot and discuss them today and in Yirtzeh Hashem next week, the last Mishnayot, which is approximately 50% of the material. And now to make it really bigger, that one can read it, let's start reading the first Mishnah. Arvei Pesachim, Samuch lemincha lo yochal adam ad shetechshach. On the eve of the Pesach, one should not eat before until it's dark. Why? Because he should start the day with appetite and with some excitement. Ve'afilu ani sheb'Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyasev. Even a poor person should not eat without hasaba, sitting like a king. And he should sit and until he reclines on his left side, and that is a symbol that he is a free and wealthy person who reclines when they eat. That is a classical minhag of the Roman period that they were very relaxed when they were eating, and they were like in a mesiba, in a circle they were sitting. And even the poor person should do that. And nobody of the, even the poor person should not drink less than 4 cups, even if he needs for that the food from the charity. Hold on, we didn't talk yet how many cups we drink. We didn't explain the idea of Abiyuddha Hanasi. You are the biggest teacher. Please explain that in the evening we have 4 cups, and the 4 cups are for the Kiddush and the Haggadah and the Birkat HaMazon and so on. And afterwards say, you know, everybody should have it, even the poor person. Why do we start the evening with the poor person? That's not very pedagogic, the way he starts. And here I think we have one of the most wonderful insights in the Haggadah. A poor person, if the Mishnah starts, and we talk about the evening, yes, when does it start? Don't eat before. But the most important thing is a poor person has to stay with you at the Seder. And that's what we say later, yes, at the opening of the Haggadah, Kol dichfin yetev yitzrach. In Halachmania, we invite everybody who needs it, please be our guest. Why is that so important? We don't say that at the beginning of Sukkot. Everybody should come, please, every poor person, come to the Seder. We don't say that for Shabbat. Everybody should be our guest on the Shabbos table. Of course, it's ideal, but why is that emphasized here? And I think Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi made a very clear statement. If you are going to talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we have Lechem Oni, the bread of poverty, and you tell the story about poverty, and we experience the exodus from poverty, don't talk history. Don't give me great ideas, and a poor person cannot sit with you at the table. If that is the case, you miss the entire evening. Whatever the explanations are afterwards, if no poor person is with you, you did not understand what history is. History is not to learn what happened 3,000 years ago. History is that you do it now. And you see how beautifully, I will not elaborate all these sources, many places in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who was very rich, said, Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim hem. Everybody should have the honor to be like a king. At the Pesach Seder, if I'm not taking care of people who are poor and needed, you did not understand the evening. That is the key. I want to elaborate now another issue. Arba kosot shel yayin. If one looks at the Seder evening, and here you see the entire Mishnah, where I added 4 symbols, the first cup, the second cup, the third and fourth cup in the Mishnah, it is very, very clear why we have 4 kosot. There is no need to explain it if we understand the Mishnah. Just keep reading, and it's like a table of content to say we have 4 cups. That is a very pedagogical, very good introduction. We have 4 cups. Kiddush, Haggadah, Birkat HaMazon, and afterwards the second part of the Halel. However, and now I leave the Mishnah for a moment and I go to the Midrash, to the Talmud. The Yerushalmi Talmud explains why Minayim le'arba kosot. And that's a great exercise to explain the arba kosot. After I said that there is no need to explain it, and the Yerushalmi does explain it, we have to understand what do they want in the Yerushalmi. And as many parts of my explanations here, you will get the presentation, and you can hopefully and you can review it afterwards. I will not elaborate each slide in much detail. I want to give ideas and an overview. What is the reason for the 4 kosot? Rabbi Yochanan explains it's in parallel to the 4 leshonot ha-geula. Vo'tzeti ve'itzalti ve'lakachti atchem li'lam. These are the 4 Lashonot of Geula. That's the first opinion. That's not really hard to understand because that's what we are talking about the Seder night. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, K'neged arba kosot shel paro. When Yosef was in jail, in the prison, and there were 2 people from servants of Paro, and they had dreams, the Saha Mashkim had the dream that he is preparing wine for Paro. And Yosef knew to explain it. 4 times the word Paro, the 4 times the word kos, cup is mentioned there. Why is that related to the Exodus of Egypt? How is that connected? That was 210 years earlier. Has nothing to do with the Exodus. So Yerushalmi, if you explain something, why do we need Arba Kosot? There is no need to explain it. It's obvious. But if you explain it, explain something that makes sense. That doesn't make sense at all. What did I have in mind? And if we talk about Chazal, we should keep in mind that the name Chazal means our sages. They were very smart people. They had a very clear idea here. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wants to tell us the Exodus of Egypt is dependent what one person accomplished. When the Jewish people came to Egypt, they came there to survive the Ra'av, the difficult time, 400 years ago, 210 years ago. It was Yosef who took care. It was Yosef, when he was in jail, that he started the career with Pharaoh, and he explained dreams. He explained the dreams of others. He explained the dream of Pharaoh, and he realized his own dream. Yosef is the hero of the evening. And he says, yes, I know Exodus of Egypt is when they left with Moshe. But even Moshe knew he has to take the bones of Yosef because he is the role model we are walking through this evening. One person can make a big difference. The other explanation is Keneged Arba Malchuyot or Keneged Kos Shel Puranut. So that is a new look at the Exodus of Egypt. We don't explain history in only what happened at that evening of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We see it in a much broader context. And I think the Yerushalmi is very exciting how he explains these ideas. Now we come to the Mishnah, which is very, very problematic. Heviu lefanav, metabel b'chazeret ad shemagia l'parper tapat. Heviu lefanav matza b'chazeret b'charoset u'shnei tafshilin, af al pi she'en charoset mitzvah. Rabbi Lezer ברבי צדוק אומר מצווה, ובמקדש היו מביאים לפניו גופו של פסח. You have the translation here. The text here is not very clear. What they do, what is exactly, why do we need chazeret? Where is the maror? Where, if the maror is there, why is it not called maror? Because in the Torah it says maror. What for the charoset? Why the shnei tafshilim? So we have to take a closer look at this Mishnah, and I think we will learn some very, very interesting material here. I said it in the introduction. He lived after the destruction of the temple, but he wants to give a model. What do we do today at the time of the destruction? We remember, and we have a Seder plate, and the plate reminds us what happened at the time of the Mikdash. We are not there. We have Shnei Tafshilim. We have our dinner, but no korban. But Abba Mikdash, hayu mevi'im lefanav gufo shel Pesach. And if we have this context, we can understand in the next Mishnah, it says that the child starts to ask questions. Ma nishtana alayla ze? And he asks questions about the korban. But he didn't eat yet. Why is the Chacham Mehaman nishtana so intelligent that he knows even what he didn't see? Does he remember it from last year and ask now a question? That wouldn't be a big chacham if it takes him a year to ask the question. He didn't see anything. But in the Mikdash, that was the time when they started to eat. When they were singing together with the Korban, they were singing the Hallel. And the Hallel was the background music. That is the context of the Korban. Yes, today we don't have that. But now we understand very well that we actually are in a certain avelut when we have the Seder plate. We remember it. We are not there, but we want to be there. So the tenth perek in the Mishnah is related to the Korbanot, knowing very well we are not there, but we want to be there. And we should see how that reflects later on in the text. I will skip that. And here we come to very, very specific research of the text. I hope I will not dry out lose your attention here. It is fascinating because we have to deal with the text. What does the text exactly mean? Heviu lefanav, they brought him. What did they bring him? And he dips it in chazeret till he starts the food. In the Yerushalmi, The text of the Mishnah, it says, Heviu lefanav yirakot, they brought vegetables, v'chazeret, and also chazeret, v'hu metabel b'chazeret. Why chazeret? What is this? Why it's so special about the chazeret, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi? And we have shnei tafshilim, two dishes, which are missing in the Yerushalmi. Why are they missing here? And it says, uva mikdash, hayu mevi'im lefanav gufo shel Pesach. In the mikdash, they used to bring him the korban. In the text of the Mishnah, in the Yerushalmi, which is in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't say, uva mikdash, hayu mevi'im lefanav. It says, uva mikdash, mevi'im lefanav gufo shel Pesach. Means the reality, the historical reality in the Yerushalmi Mishnah is, that's what you do at home, and that's what you do in the Mikdash. It's not past history in the media, in the Mikdash. They used to bring the Korban. That's what they do now. Because in Yerushalmi, the Mishnah remembers the tradition of the time of the Mikdash. Mikdash is not far away. Of course, in the Mishnah of the Bavli, it says, Uva Mikdash hayu mevi'im lefanav. And they add Shnei Tavshilim. Because if we have any chag, we need to eat something. So you add Shnei Tavshilim. Oh, we don't have the Korban? If you don't have the Korban, the Shnei Tavshilim are Zecha LeKorban. It's history. That's the way we create history. We create memory. The Yerushalmi Mishnah, it's the same Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Or the Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he did not have the Babylonian version, because he didn't live in Babylon, and that was much later. Mikdash is a reality, because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not accept Tisha B'Av. He lived it as a reality. That's a wonderful source. Those who enjoy to read the manuscript, you see everything that I showed you here, you can touch history. Touch the screen and you touch history. Here it says, V'charoset. It doesn't say after Chazeret, V'charoset. Afal Pisha'en, it doesn't say Shnei Tavshilim. It doesn't say the word Hayu, Uva Mikdash Mevi'im Lefanav. And the same is true from the Palna, from the Cambridge manuscript, as you can see it here. Please enjoy touching history here in the text and here, even here, additions. Now we go back and learn more. What do we have in this Mishnah? We have Matzah, okay. And we have at the end the Korban Pesach. And where is the Mahor? The Maror is the Chazeret. We know from the Mishnah in the second chapter in Masechet Psachim, Hakol Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that one of the types that you can use of Maror is called Chazeret, lettuce. It's called Chazeret. Why doesn't he call it Maror? Why does he make me nervous? I want to hear at the evening Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Here we have Pesach and here we have Matzah. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you are the greatest teacher. Please, if you want to talk about Maror, don't tell me Chazeret, which can be used if I know the second chapter in the Mishnah. We can know it's also a Maror. If you want to say Maror, do me a favor. Just say Maror. Why do we make me nervous? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had a very, very clear reason for that, I want to say. Because it says in the Gemara, in Masechet Brachot, Vayomer Hashem la, Hashem told Rivka, Shnei goyim bevitnech. Two nations are in your belly. Geim, v'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, elu Antoninus v'Rebi. There were two important figures. Not Esav and Yaakov. It was Antoninus. And it was, one was Antoninus and the other was Rav Yehuda Hanasi. Why? Because those tables, they were very wealthy. And they never lacked for radish, nor lettuce, or any other very, very special vegetables, not in the summer, nor in the rainy season. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he called the Maror, which is very bitter, which is very much exile, which reflects the diaspora, the bitterness of the diaspora. No, for him, this Maror, which is clearly identified, Chazeret, and Chazeret is a good Maror, but he wanted to call it Chazeret. That's what he was eating, Rebbe, with Antoninus. He wanted to be a king. He wanted to reflect the independence of Am Yisrael. And eating maror, yes, we remember very well. Maror al shuma, we will hear it. But he takes the chazeret and he dips it the way Antoninus used to do it in his famous food, his famous style of the king, of a king. Therefore, matzah, chazeret, and Pesach reflect Pesach, matzah, umaror. That is what we say right afterwards in the Manishtana. Here we have a text of the Manishtana, which is not the text in the Mishnah, which we have in our Haggadah. In the Haggadah, we do not have the Korban anymore. And instead of that, we have the way how we sit. You see here the text in brown in my Haggadah version. And instead of these words here, it is replaced by other meanings, which I cannot elaborate. The Kaufman manuscript has only Tibul, Matzah, and Korban. Meaning it is exactly Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. And the next Mishnah explains Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim ele bePesach. So the Kaufman Haggadah is very helpful to explain why these three issues have to be explained. I will not elaborate in details what we have now in the next part of the Mishnah. Ulefi dato shel ben aviv melamdo. According to the intelligence and the intellectual ability or interest of the son, the father teaches him. We have on the website Shiurim from last year, where we talk about the source about the four sons. The Mishnah doesn't explain the four sons. The Mishnah only says, teach according to the level of the student, of your children. Do not teach just out of the blue what you want to teach. Teach what they can understand, what is of interest for them. The Bavli explains that. And I would just give you a few seconds, a summary of the main idea, which you will find in the other part of the website, because I think it's relevant for the evening. Now we go from the Mishnah backwards. The Yerushalmi explains there are four different types of children. And one is Chacham, one is Rasha, one is Tam, and Sheino Yodea Lishol. But here I want to show you one of the earliest explanations on the Arba'at HaBanim, and that is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he wrote in the Bible about these four sons, he had something very, very special in mind. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Zichrono Livracha, explained beautifully in his Haggadah that there are two civilizations of Egypt, of buildings, of huge pyramids, and of slavery and of power. And there is another civilization of Moshe Rabbeinu. The only things he has in mind before they leave Egypt is, how do I explain it, my children? What should my children learn today and tomorrow? And here you see not a midrash, a pshat you see. When they were in Egypt, they lived in the place of slavery. They asked a question which the midrash identifies afterwards as rasha. The Jewish children are not rashaim. They are good boys and good girls, but they are in slavery. After they left, that is what comes here in the flow of the Bible, they were speechless. They were running out of Egypt and they couldn't talk. It was time to run, not time to talk. Afterwards, Moshe tells the children, in the future, your child will ask a question. And after 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu says, now you learned. It took you some 40 years to understand and to learn and to grow in the Torah. And at the end, every child is a chacham. So that is a beautiful insight, which is not directly our Mishnah. The Yerushalmi talks about four children and makes a midrash on the four psukim. So I mentioned that briefly, and you will find on the website the material and also a paper I wrote in Hebrew. Here, another midrash, which is brought in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Arba Banim. And we have the text. You will find that also on the website with a paper I prepared. Lezichor shel Rav Amital. And here we have the text of the four Arba Banim in the Haggadah. And that the source is the Arba Banim in the Mechilta, a midrash to the Sefer Shmot. How interesting that the same midrash of Rabbi Yishmael is brought in the Yerushalmi, but they have a few differences. And these differences are very interesting. because they are surprising. Here it is not brought in the name of Rabbi Ishmael, it's brought in the name of Rabbi Chiya. And he brings four children, and one of them is the Rasha. Let's take a closer look on the Rasha. Let me enlarge this Rasha. And you can hear very clearly, it was too small for a translation. Ben Rasha, ma hu omer? Ma avodah hazot lachem? Ma hatorach hazeh shatem matrichim aleinu b'chol shana b'shana? Mikivan shotzi et atzmo min haklal, af ata emor lo b'avur zeh asa Hashem li. Li asa, le'oto ish lo asa. Ilu haya oto ha'ish b'mitzrayim, lo haya ra'ui lehigael misham le'olam. What does the Rasha say? What is this hard work for you? It's a pain what you work here, says the son. Every year again. What's the explanation in the Yerushalmi? Because he excluded himself from part of Am Yisrael, you should also exclude him. Bavur ze asa Hashem li. Li, he did it to me. Would this man have been there? Lo oto ha'ish lo asa. For this man, he didn't do that. Oto ha'ish is in the rabbinic literature a hint, it could not be spelled out, for Jesus. Lo oto ha'ish lo asa, he is not part of that. He doesn't like the mitzvot, he's not part of it. Ilu haya oto ha'ish b'mitzrayim, would this man have been in Egypt? Lo haya ra'ui lehigael misham le'olam. He would never ever have been liberated from Egypt. Pesach is the Last Supper. The Seder is the Last Supper. The Rasha that the Midrash is talking about, not the Mishnah doesn't know about it, the Rasha that is mentioned here is Oto HaIsh, who celebrates the evening with a new meaning. And the Haggadah says, the Yerushalmi and the Mechilta, it's not the Rasha from Egypt. The Rasha in Egypt is not the Rasha, as I showed you on the previous slide. He is the child who lives in Egypt and he didn't understand what's going on, but he is not the Rasha. That's not the way of Jewish education. He is the boy who doesn't understand Lefi Apshat. He is afterwards in the Midrash considered, there is another discussion about Oto HaIsh. It's early Christianity, the Judeo-Christian area. Who was part of that and not? In the next week's lecture, I want to show you an example, I think an overwhelming, fascinating example, where it's obvious that the Haggadah is talking about the New Testament, but that will come next week. So here we have a clear statement that the Rasha is somebody totally different than just the Jewish boy who is off the derech. That's not the topic at all. If somebody is not following, we have to teach him. And here we have something fascinating, that Rabbi Chiya is not only more explicit about the Rasha and the identity about the Rasha, Rabbi Chiya identifies the answer of the Chacham with the answer to the Tam. And the answer to the Chacham, to the Tam, is switched. I searched in the literature and I found very strange answers. It's a mistake, it was misunderstood, it's a common source. I cannot finish the sentence, whatever they said doesn't make sense to me. But I think here we have a wonderful, amazing example. If the Mechilta said, a smart man who asked, Ma ha'edut v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Hashem Elokeinu otam. You should tell him everything. Be'ilchot ha'pesach, ein maftirim achar ha'pesach afikoman. Why is that halacha so important? For a simple reason. It's the last Mishnah of this perek. It is the last Mishnah of the entire Masechet. Teach him everything. He is a chacham. Let him be a talmid chacham and teach him everything. The Tam, who ask very general and stupid and naive questions, tell him, oh, it was really, really dangerous and I'm safe. Rabbi Chiya changes the order. There is a Gemara in Masechet Psachim about Rabbi Chiya. And Rabbi Chiya was a student and a friend of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who died before Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So back to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And when Rabbi Yehuda came to the kever, to the grave of Rabbi Chiya, he heard a voice from heaven and he said, Rabbi Chiya made it happen that the Torah was never forgotten from Am Yisrael. What did he do? A long story, which I cannot elaborate it here. Rabbi Chiya went to different villages and he brought food. And he took a child, and he taught one child Sefer Breshit, and the other child Sefer Shmot Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim. And afterwards, he taught them all the Mishnayot. And he told them afterwards, now I have to run. Breshit child, teach the others. Bamidbar Shmot child, teach all the other children. That is called in modern education science, it's called the jigsaw small classroom teaching. He empowered every child that he can be a teacher. That's what Rabbi Chiya did. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had to recognize and to accept he did a great job, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, not bad at all, to be the editor of the Mishnah. But Rabbi Chiya, he brought it to the children because he empowered every child. Now look how beautifully and meaningful the switch is. He told the Ben Chacham, don't give me sophisticated answers of Ein Maftirim, Machar, HaPesach, HaFikuman, all details. Stay clear and simple. If you are a Chacham, your Chochmah will be measured if you are still clear, simple, and meaningful. And he told the Tipesh, child who didn't have the opportunity to learn that much, he gives him the answer of the Chacham. Because Rabbi Chiya believes every child can learn. Let my people know, as Rav Steinsaltz used to say. Every person can learn. So Rabbi Chiya switched the order of the Chacham and the Rasha and made it very meaningful. That's an elaboration in Chacham. And that's an elaboration of the Midrash Chazal of the Arba'at Abanim, which is not purely the topic of our lecture now of the Mishnah. Let's go back to another fascinating topic, a really important rule of the Mishnah, in four words, matchil begnut u'mesayem b'shevach. Whatever you tell in the Haggadah, you start with the disgrace and you conclude with the glory. Why is that? Because we are not only celebrating how wonderful, amazing, and outstanding we are, we celebrate also that we had big mistakes, we were slaves, we were involved in Avodah Zarah, in idolatry. So we learn about the negative parts, but we grew over history. That's a very important message. And there are many very interesting ideas. What is the Gnut exactly? And what is the Shevach? In the text of the Haggadah, after the Manishtana, we start with Avadim Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, as you can see here. And we have another start in the Haggadah, which is Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Yu Ovdeinu B'Mitzrayim. Why do we start twice? One is according to Rav Shmuel, and one according to Rav. We have two different explanations in the Babylonian Talmud, as we see here. Rav says we start with Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves. And Shmuel says, no, it's not a slavery and a physical slavery. It is we were of the Avodah Zarah. We did not recognize Hashem. One is the body and one is the spirit. Two different approaches. Do they agree? Do they say something different? The Ritba says, it might be the Yerushalmi says, they don't disagree. Everybody points out something else. And now please fasten seatbelts. I will take you to a fascinating journey. I want to show that the disgrace of Avadim Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, we were slaves, but also involved in Avodah Zarah, takes us actually back to the Bible. And that's a fascinating observation if we look at the Haggadah in this context. It says, right at the Exodus from Egypt, it says, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemo. Hashem spoke to Moshe, Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'yashuvu, v'yachanu lifnei pi hachirot, ben migdol uven hayam, lifnei baal tzefon nichechot tachanu al hayam. Don't run away from Egypt, Hashem tells them. They just left. And Hashem tells them, Moshe, call them back. Don't be like children who are running away from school. Please wait. You should wait at the place Pi Achirot and at the other place Migdol, which is next to Baal Tzefon. Where are these places? You can ask all the archaeologists. They will not find in Egypt a Hebrew name just at the Exodus of Egypt called Pi Achirot, nor will they find the name called Migdol or Baal Tzefon. They will find many, many places with Egyptian names. But that is not Hebrew, was not the geography there. So what does the Torah want to tell us here? And that's really a fascinating chidush, which I found a few years ago. Pi hachirot is the port of liberty. Pi is the mouth, the port. Am Yisrael, you enter liberty, you leave Egypt. And this experience is composed from two different aspects. One is Migdol. Migdol is a tower. You are not slaves anymore. You can walk out free as a free citizens of Egypt. And the other one is Baal Tzafon. Baal is the name of Avodah Zarah, and Tzafon is the north. The god of Egypt, the sun, Ra, nothing worse than Ra, is in the north. If you cross it, if you cross the border and you go afterwards to the north, to Eretz Yisrael, you're actually fighting against the north, which is the sun. That is the meaning of liberty. Liberty has a physical component of slavery and another component of Avodah Zarah spiritually. That's the meaning of the Exodus of Egypt. And now we understand beautifully when we come from the Mishnah, Matril Begnut, Umesayem Beshevach, yes. Rav says it's Avdut Avodah Zarah. And Shmuel says it's Avadim Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. You see it as the opening of the Seder. And the Ritva and the Yerushalmi says these are two different openings of the Seder. How do you start with Matril Begnut? One is according to the Avadim, because that's what they experience in Egypt. When they just left Egypt, before they crossed the Yam Suf, that's what it says. Hashem called them back and tells them, please celebrate freedom. Freedom means you pass the tower, nobody will kill you, nobody will take you back. Freedom means you also pass the Egyptian Avodah Zarah, and nobody will hurt you. You can do whatever you want, and you go to Har Sinai, you will not continue there. I think that is a fascinating insight that combines the Bible, the Mishnah, and the explanation of the Gemara. The last point I want to show to share with you is on these slides. It says afterwards, V'doresh mi'arami oved avi, he starts to read the declaration one recites when presenting his first fruits in the Mikdash, until he concludes to explain as a Midrash the entire section. Please, are we celebrating now Pesach or Shavuot? Did something go wrong here? Don't we talk about Pesach? You're now celebrating the first fruits? We are not yet there. We didn't cross the desert. We didn't enter Eretz Yisrael. We have no fruits. We are celebrating Pesach. Why do we talk now about the first fruits? Did Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi miss something? The opposite is true. We miss something if we don't understand that. Because Exodus from Egypt is not over that we are not slaves anymore. It's not the freedom from Egypt. It is the freedom for Eretz Yisrael. And when we enter Eretz Yisrael and we get to the new place, only if we are free for Har Sinai, for Eretz Yisrael, only that is the conclusion of the Seder. And the next day of the Seder, we start counting Sfirat HaOmer, very meaningfully. It's all related. And in the Seder, we sing 15 times, Ilu Otzianu, Kama Ma'alot Tavot La'Makom Aleinu. Dayenu, 15 lines, and kama alahat kama v'chama tova u'kfula u'mechupelet la'makom aleinu. 15 levels, 15 like the steps of the Shirei HaMa'alot. We spoke about it in the Tehillim class. And what do we describe here? Exodus from Egypt, the walking through the desert, Har Sinai, and we come to Eretz Yisrael, and we live in Eretz Yisrael with the Torah, and we build the Beit HaBchira temple, and we bring our fruits. The fruits are the end point, are the destination of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Yetziat Mitzrayim is not only out of Egypt, out of slavery. It is out of slavery for a new commitment to Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, exactly in this place, the Haggadah later on brings us to Eretz Yisrael, Ke'ilu Beit HaMikdash. I don't have the time to elaborate here the beautiful parasha, but we have it online as a lecture on this topic. And I will show you now to summarize, and I apologize, I didn't have time to translate everything. Why do we say this section at the Seder? Because that is the closing of the Exodus of Egypt. Parshat Bikurim, once somebody is in Eretz Yisrael, he has a big, big closure of the Exodus of Egypt. And I want to show that to you by looking at the Mishnah. There is a Mishnah which we just are dealing with in Psachim. Matril begnut u'mesayem b'shevach v'doresh me'arav mi oved avi ad she'igmor kol ha'parasha kula. The same Mishnah is mentioned in Masechet Bikurim, where the mitzvot of bringing the first fruits are described. V'kohen maniach yadot tachtav u'menifo v'kore me'arav mi oved avi ad she'hu gomer kol ha'parasha kula. What we are saying here as a midrash, we are reading there as a declaration. If we bring the fruits to Eretz Yisrael, we close the exodus of Egypt. And that brings us to a beautiful insight of the Jewish calendar, which is explained at length on the website and can be discussed for every Chag. But look how beautifully Pesach and Shavuot are strongly related, everything around Eretz Yisrael. Out of the exile, and Shavuot is when we are with the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, connected by the 7 weeks of Sfirat HaOmer, and in our generation, it is together with Yom HaShoah, Yom Yerushalayim, Lag BaOmer, many generations ago, and Yom Yerushalayim. Very, very meaningful, the journey out of Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. That's exactly what we celebrate. But let me show that to you now in the biblical text. In the biblical text, we celebrate the Haggadah, the Higadita. 7 days we eat matzot, and you tell vehigadata levincha bayom havu. You should do the Haggadah. What does it mean, vehigadata? The word of the term Haggadah. The term of Haggadah comes back when we read the parasha about the first fruits. The farmer comes to the priest in the Mikdash, ve'amarta elav, and you should tell him, higaditi hayom lashem elokecha kivati el haaretz. What does it mean, higadati lashem? I did Haggadah now that I am in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't say a word. He comes with his fruits. The Sforno explains, I do it mitoch ma'asai. I'm not saying a word. And he brings a pasuk, which is very, very good proof from Sefer Shmuel. There is a verbal communication and there is a non-verbal communication. A farmer who brings fruits from his land to Eretz Yisrael, to the Kohen, he talks a very clear language without a word. And he tells the story. I'm here. I'm back. I live in Eretz Yisrael, but I remember the past. That's mitzvah Haggadah. The Mishnah says you best take for the purpose of the telling the story of Egypt, you take Bikurim because that is the whole journey. And that connects everything together. So that was the summary. And I will close that we look today at the first time of the Mishnah. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, next week, I should elaborate the second part of the Mishnah, which has very, very interesting historical insights, and it should show how it prepares the text at the evening of the Seder. And on the Tehillim lecture this week, we should explain Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the Hallel HaGadol, which is together with the Hallel HaMitzri, a very important part of the Seder Haggadah, as clearly indicated in the Mishnah, but that should be explained in the Tehillim lecture, Betzaref Lekam. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Rav Benny. I'm just putting in your link, if I can get it, for your talk last year. There we go, on Egyptology. I just put it in the a year ago for talk we mentioned at the beginning. Always creative, original, beautiful. By the way, I thought, does anybody have any questions? I didn't see so many in the chat box. Let me look, hold on. Anybody wants to orally speak up, please feel free to do so. Benny, I would tie in Lifnei Baal Tzafon to Tzafun of the Haggadah.
Sorry?
Tzafun, you know, like the Afikoman hidden, like that, not just north. And the idea is that a slave can't speak. Rav Soloveitchik develops that whole thing, Pi HaChirot, that a slave doesn't have the ability to, they couldn't cry out even. They didn't know how to daven. So there's sort of a whole, you know, other aspect to that also.
Very, very nice. Logotherapy, if you can talk about it, if we can talk about it, we actually went through the process of a logotherapy, of the bibliotherapy. We walked through by telling the story. And by the way, Tzafun, what you said, Miriam was hiding Moshe three months. And Yosef is called Tzofnat Ba'anech.
Right.
He could decipher what was hidden from the sun. There's a lot to talk about Avodah Zarah.
The hiding of chametz, and there's a lot going on there. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, please speak up now. Okay, Susan, thank you. And we look forward, those who have not been coming to the Tehillim lecture, your Bakasha, welcome Tuesday at 12:15 Eastern. That's 6:15 right now in Israel, till after Pesach. Then we'll be back to a 7-hour difference. Right now we're at 6 hours. Tomorrow, our third in our Chazaka of Alon Shvut, Rav Amnon Bazak, Yavir Shir Bivrit, Keneged Arba Banim Dibrat Torah Pshat Utrash, Esakol Muzmanim, Bachad Vereva, Shaon Daylight Savings Time. Daylight Savings Time, I don't know. Bivrit, 1:15 here, 7:15 in Israel. And Malka Simkowitz, as I mentioned earlier, will be finishing her series on the Apocrypha tomorrow. And Mark Shapiro, that's at 11 a.m. Eastern. And Mark Shapiro continues this weekly class at 8:30. Yosef Aruba will finish her Shir Shirim class on her series on Tuesday at 1:30. And right after Benny's class on Tehillim. And then Rabbi Avner will finish his series on Rav Soloveitchik and Pesach. And Thursday, Shuli Mishkin will finish her series on the Mishnah, which, by the way, last week she did on Rav Yehuda HaNasi. A lot of archaeology. She didn't quote the same source as you did, but lots of stuff. And then, please God, we're starting to put together our post-Pesach program. And always happy to hear from people with ideas and suggestions and critique how we can do things even better. And we always like to hear suggestions from people. So thank you very much. I don't know. I don't have my chat box open. Let me open. I see a bunch of things. But
Rabbi Jay, I just have to congratulate your clear skills of organization. You made it in the date that the next shiur in 48 hours will deal exactly about the next step in the Mishnah, which is exactly taking it from Tehillim.
That's of course, all planned.
It's obvious it was planned. It comes without saying.
Of course, that goes without saying.
Those who didn't understand the clear organizational skills of Rabbi J, here we are. Yeah, it's obvious. You didn't even need to mention that, right?
Really, right. But really, the Tehillim series is really Tehillim as you've never learned it before. That is for sure. Benny, I have here, this is an old one. But I see here, Tafshin, Samach Beit, when you lived in Toronto, sponsored by Eli Podolsky. Allah Shalom. I know you've done an update, but this is the PowerPoint he gave out when he gave Shir in Toronto 20 years ago. Much more expanded in the last 20 years. Thank you, Benny. I need to get a copy of this, like to have it live. You know,
we'll get one. I will meet somebody tonight who takes it to Toronto. Tell me how many you need, and you will get it.
Okay.
And that's more compatible with the neighbors on your. On your Seder evening, this one is not, you're not making friends with your...
This is also very hard to read, and it's, just one page. So I need one of those, for sure.
So okay. You will get it, and Mirzashem in 10 years we'll have a better one.
Okay, but for the next 10 years, that will work well.
For the
okay, anybody else want us, let us know, we'll try to get Dr. Benny. Is Kinko still around, by the way? I have no idea. Does Kinko still exist? Those who don't know what I'm talking about, you have to live in Toronto for this one. But Dr. Benny kept Kinko's in business with all his, that was the printing press. I don't know, I haven't heard of them since you left the city, you know, so I don't know what's
Oh, by Jay, 10 years after I left, I entered the store and 5 people came to me to welcome me. Oh, you weren't here for a long time?
All right. There you go. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. This was really a good sheet.
Yeah. Okay, Benny, we look forward to seeing you next week. And Susan, thank you behind the scenes.
Not 2 days.
No, of course. I next mean, week. And Haggadah. Yeah, yeah. Tehillim and Haggadah. Yeah. So we're keeping Benny busy this week. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course.
Well, if somebody wants a copy, I don't know if you can send me an email and I will try to do my best. I can't promise. But it says in the Haggadah, L'shana Haba Yerushalayim. So whoever comes next year to Yerushalayim, you can give it to here.
Yeah. I don't know. Are they letting anybody in? By the way, if they said they haven't, they're not letting anybody. If you're vaccinated, are
not
they
yet. April. They said April 1st.
So that doesn't work for Pesach. I mean, it works for Chol HaMoed, I guess. But
so I'm happy to send those who send me an email. I will try to do my best.
Yeah. If you live in Toronto, it gets first crack at it, right? If that's fair. Maybe that's not fair. But the Or Chaim crowd, where Dr. Benny used to daven and give all his shirim 20 years ago. Wow. For 3 years when he was doing his fellowship at Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto and at the same time getting a PhD at University of Toronto and in Jewish medical ethics under Dr. David Novak, right? That's who you got your PhD under.
Tell me how many copies you want, Rabbi
J. I don't know. Who is in Toronto? You know what? We'll give him out to some of the chevra. I don't go to Shula. Okay, Howie Gantz wants one, our neighbor. Send me, how many? I don't know, 10, 15. I mean, what's reasonable? I don't want to make it too difficult, but
I'll try.
It won't be hard to give them out here. I'll give Jack one. You know, I'll give
very good. I'll send a few copies. Kol Tov, thank you very much.
Okay, Kol Tov, everybody. Thank you and have a wonderful day. We look forward to seeing
you. Shavua Tov.
Okay.
A good Chodesh.
Good Chodesh, yes. And if you, for Rabbi Zakshir, please register if you have not done so already, and we look forward to learning with you. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yashar Koach to you, Rabbi. Outstanding.
I'm the shotgun here, you know.
Okay, fine. You need the shotgun too.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And stay well.
Thank you. Be well. Bye-bye. Bye.